Here we are. And this is the Soul Esteem Center, the Church of Reverend Phyllis Clay Sparks, here in St. Louis, Missouri. In case anyone hears this tape. Today is Saturday, and our topic for our seminar today is healing. That was last night. There we go. Healing is a way of life. Healing is a way of life. And these are the things that we'll be covering today. What is our every moment word? What is our every moment thought? What is our every moment action? How do we look at the world about us? What is the cause controlling the world? And ways we can begin to change our way of life. Now think about it. Every one of us is born. And we come into this world, and we have chosen a family that is important to us. And so we live with this family, and this family guides us and shows us things that are important for them to get across to us and to tell us how wonderful we are or what a bunch of little snots we are, you know. And we have brothers and sisters, and the brothers and sisters are, you know, whatever the brothers and sisters are. And we have neighbors, and we have pets, and we have aunts and uncles and cousins and teachers in school. We have ministers. We have the whole plethora of life experiences that we create, controlling us, directing us, training us, and teaching us. Okay. Sounds intimidating, and it is. Now, there are two kinds of children. One child rebels, and the other child does what it pleases. You say, oh, just two? That's right. One rebels and does everything against the program and lives a very difficult life. Now, the other child does whatever they want to do because they like themselves, and they like themselves so much, nobody feels they have to tell them what to do. Nobody feels they have to correct them. Nobody feels they have to, because the kid's just cooperative. The kid is thinking his own thoughts, but he's cooperative. He's not rebelling. See, when a child rebels, then people try to put them in line. You're going to jail. I'm going to get the boogeyman after you, and I'm going to, you know, all these fun things, you know. And so the kid just rebels more and becomes obnoxious and becomes very difficult to live with for himself and his society. Now, the child who likes himself, everybody likes him. Everybody says, isn't that a good child? Isn't that a good puppy dog? You know, he always obeys, he does the right thing, and he puts on a good show. But he's doing his own thing. Because inside of this child, the child's a happy person. Now, again, you say, just two types? Sure. You go to the child who squalls. My God, would you ever shut up? You know? And so you go to the child and pick him up to shut him up. You go to the child, pick him up, change his pants. You go to the child, pick him up, give him something to eat. You don't go to him to love him. You go to him because he's begging for attention. He's begging for having somebody give him a helping hand. Thank you. That's very thoughtful. And so what happens? That child is a rebel. He knows by rebelling he gets attention. Now the other child, cool, laying in his crib, happy as can be, and everybody wants to go to the child to love the child. Why do they go to the child? Because they want to love him. Because he's a lovable child. The child does not need love. He is love. He creates his world of love. He is pure love. The other child is figuring out how things are running. And the way he figures it out is, if I holler loud enough and strong enough, I'll get attention, and then I'll run the world. Now, in life, we have two kinds of people running the world. We have one person who runs the world, who is always telling other people what to do. And these are called politicians. They love to go around telling other people how to live their lives and what's important for them, how they should be acting, how they should be doing things. And our Mr. Bush is one of them, and he's a good guy, you know. But all of these politicians are the same. And who are other politicians? Mamas and papas. Mamas and papas are trying to tell their kids how to behave and how to live their life. Well, Herb, this sounds nothing at all like a healing meditation. Sounds nothing at all like a healing talk. What is this that you're giving to us? Well, I am giving to you what the Christians would say, be born again. Be born again. Each one of us has the privilege of being born again. We were born as the rebel or the lover, either of which is just fine. Now, today, we can be born again. We can be born again as a beautiful, fulfilled, glorious being. On the way over here, we were talking about memorial services and various other things, and I was saying, when I have a memorial service for a little child who's been with the parent for a week, 2 weeks, a day, a month, a year, or whatever, and the little child dies, and they say, oh, my God. And I say, hey, do you realize how blessed you are that that child chose to be in your family to do what it came to this earth experience to do in that shorter time? It knew. It knew. It came to do just that particular thing. And you were chosen because you were the ones who were so loving. You were the ones who were so beautiful, who helped, guided, and loved them as that experience took place. And that's fantastic. That's fantastic. Okay, now. We'll knock you all off. Bung! You're dead. Bung! You're alive. Now, you're into this. Come right in and sit down. There's a chair here just for you. And each one of us is now born into a new life. We're born into a new existence. And you see, he just came in with that sparkling face, with those eyes glowing with light and beauty. He's just born. Now, we'll turn up his rheostat, and the light will just shine out of him as a magnificent thing. And you want to take chairs away? Come right in. Right over here, just waiting for you. Another born again spiritual being. And you see, when you say you're a born again Christian, you're born again into Christ's teachings. And the Christ teachings are within each one of us. Each of you, each of us, is the Christ. That's what Jesus kept telling us. So, we're going to take this now. This is our birthing room. Yeah, you like that, huh? This is our birthing room, and we're leaving behind the dimension that we were on before, which is now. You live, we all live, once in the now, once in the here, but at this moment, we are living on an infinite number of dimensions right now. Right now. Each one of us are living on an infinite number of dimensions, but we're choosing to be on this dimension right now. Now, those of you who are here have chosen to be in paradise right at this moment with us. This is our paradise dimension. And it will be a day of our paradise dimension, our day of healing, our day of putting into motion who we are. Okay? Now, are you the giggler or are you the yowler? You know? Are you the one who already is aware of your divinity, aware of your magnificence? Or are you trying to tell the world, I'm going to control all of you. I'm going to yowl. You know, I'm going to be the kid that's got, you know, crying all the time. Or are you going to be the lover that everyone wants to come and hold you? You like that. Everyone wants to come and be your friend. And everyone wants to be around you. And nobody knows why. Do you realize why you go to pick up this little kid that is just smiling and cooing and giggling? Because that's you. He speaks to your perfect nature. He speaks to your love nature.
She speaks to.
They speak to your love nature. They speak to your goodness. And the other one, you want to shut them up. And you don't do it because they become your politicians. They become the people who govern your life. They become your parents. They become your teachers. They become the people who tell you how to live your life. And so 99% of humanity go along with that. They think that's just fine. But the 1%, that includes us here, the 1% are the lovers who are just being so loving. Do people know why they feel good when they come in your presence? Do people know why they just feel at peace when they come in your presence? Why do all the animals come up and brush against your leg and say, hey, I like you? Why is it that everything good in this world takes place in your world? And you don't know why. Because you're a lover. Inside of yourself, you are divine. Inside of yourself, you're living your divinity. You're living your purity. You're living your magnificence. Isn't that wonderful? And it's true. It's true. We say, too good to be true. Don't say that. Just say, I accept. I accept. I accept. And when you say, I accept, you are in the flow. Now, you chose to come to this life experience, and you chose to experience on this life experience not one, but a great number of dimensions. Now, this dimension that you're having today, you can keep with you for the rest of your life if you like. And this dimension is the awareness that you are the master of yourself, your thought, your ideas, your dreams. It's done unto you according to your belief. Okay, if it's done unto us according to our belief, what is our belief? She has, God bless America and everybody everywhere. Well, that's a bunch of garbage. And I say that only because we had a couple of little boys on campus, and we teach, I am God, God I am. We are teaching, there's only God everywhere. Everybody is God. Everything is God. This banana is God. This banana is God. And if you say it's not God, you're saying there is a place in the universe where God is not. And we cannot do that, can we? We can never say there is a place where God is not. God, and wherever God is, all of God is present. Okay, now. So, God bless America, land that I love. I stand beside her and guide her through the night with the light from above. But the boy said, Herb, why do we say that? I said, what do you mean? He says, I am God. I bless America, land that I love. Hey, you're right. You're right. I'm teaching this stuff, and he's teaching me, you know. And he's right. Now, I bless. Isn't it much more beautiful when you say, I bless America and everyone everywhere?
The same thing.
It's the same thing. But does it mean the same thing to you? Oh, God. God. You see, this is what we want to do now. Take responsibility for being God. Take responsibility for saying, I bless America. Take responsibility for saying, I am in charge of my life. Take responsibility for saying, here's one.
You don't know him.
She speaks her word, and it is done. She speaks her word, and it is done. Now, she didn't have to say, I should do something about it. But you see, instantly, and this is not done as amusement, this is done as a fact. The moment she says, I, it is done. So long as she says, I will do it, or I plan on doing it, or I will make the change in my thinking, then it'll never be done. Because, are you a good girl? I try. I try. Yeah, I don't want you to try to be a good boy. I want you to be a good boy, you know. When I say these are the rules, do it. Now, that's an authoritarian, dictatorial attitude coming out of somebody's mouth. Mine. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There we go again. Now, did I have to tell her that she was God? She knew it. She knew it. She's just going around being genteel, you know, saying it in a very gentle way. But does she mean it? Well, sort of. Now, why do you bless everyone everywhere? Who gives a damn? I mean, who gives a damn? The only person you care about is yourself. The only person I care about is myself. Herb, that is really terrible. That is really bad. No. The only person I care about is myself. And when I have my house in order, when I have my vision in order, I can only see out here everything perfect and beautiful and good. Now, I've heard about Miss Sparks over here. I've heard about Miss Sparks. I've heard what a glorious, beautiful woman she is. I have heard how she stands with such dignity and such charm, and that every piece of clothing she ever wears, she looks just like she's a model for some fashion magazine. I have heard how she keeps her hair always in perfect, you know, you think that this casualness that she has her hair tossed hither and yon, she spends hours putting it like that. I mean, she created that casual look because it is so beautiful. And now, you say, Herb, you are so silly. No. She loves herself. She loves herself. And does she want a big center here? No. What she wants is a place to share her love. And all those who come to her, she will share her love. And if the place needs to be bigger, it'll be bigger. It'll be bigger. No matter what is needed, it'll be done. When Billy Graham was being interviewed on a show, the talk person, what was his name?
Alive.
Okay, this talk show host said,
Alive person.
The talk show person said, Larry King Alive, there you go. And he said, what is it that you would like to accomplish in your life on your spiritual growth? And he said, I would like to have more humility. Now here we have the greatest evangelist of all time who reaches thousands of people at a crack. He goes around the world and his audiences are just legend and legion. They're fantastic. And he speaks with an authority of one who knows God personally. He doesn't say that he's God, but that will come to him. And what does he do? Even in all of his greatness, he realizes the need for humility. Now, it's not the humility that you're thinking about. It's not being humble to God outside himself. It's being humble to the divine within himself. Now you see, when he comes to the point of being humble to the God within himself, he will be a different person. Now I'm just going to use this reference here. I'm not meaning any disrespect to this girl, but I want you to recognize it. We spoke about it last night. Have you ever read the book Ramtha? Interesting book, isn't it? It's a lie. It's an absolute lie from beginning to end, because it is not some being speaking to and through this lady. It's herself. It's herself. She didn't have the courage to stand up and say, this is what I believe, this is what I am, and this is what it is. My inner speaks, and this is it. Now, you see, people who do that, they know who they are. And they take credit, or they take the obligation that comes from doing it. And that's what our topic is today. Taking the responsibility for being God, for being perfect, for being wonderful, for being perfect in every way. Now, are you whole and perfect?
Uh-huh.
Are you whole and perfect?
Sure.
Huh?
Of course.
I don't want sure, of course. Yes.
Yes.
That a girl. Are you whole and perfect?
Yes.
Are you whole and perfect?
Yes.
Oh, come on. Yes. There's a way. That's absolutely. I don't want that. Yes. Yes.
Yes. Absolutely yes.
Yes. I don't want absolutely. I want yes.
Yes, yes.
I don't want any other term used in there, it is yes. And you don't say, I am wonderfully perfect. Well, what does wonderfully do? It waters it down. What does absolutely do in this relationship? It waters it down. Okay. I am perfect. Yes.
Yes.
I am perfect. Yes. That's great. Fantastic. And he came late, too. And he's still a yes.
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 Yes,
yes.
Yes. Yes.
And the super waters it down. I am perfect.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. And you're perfect.
Of course.
No, no, yes. Yes, yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. I'm a dictator. I'm a real despot.
I was wondering what that made you.
Yes, 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 yes. But if each one of us can say, under all circumstances, I am responsible for whatever happens in my life, if we say that, then we will not say, she did it to me. They did it to me. My mother was a lousy son of a person. What she did, she died. And I loved her. And she shouldn't have died. She should have stayed with me. You know, what the heck? She had all the money. And then we had to split up along with all the kids. No, whatever. She's terrible. No. If we are wise, nobody and nothing is the source of our good except ourselves. Our word is who we are. They say our word is our bond, you know. Our word is who we are. Are you whole and perfect? Are you fantastic? Are you a beautiful person? Are you as magnificent as Miss Sparks here?
I hope so.
No, 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 no.
I
am
so.
No. I am magnificent.
I am magnificent.
No comparison.
Tell her that.
Oh, she knows. Yeah. No, look. Does she think she's magnificent?
We're sure she does.
Yeah. Do you think she could see anybody in her world other than what how she is?
No.
Everybody she sees is magnificent.
Right.
She even thinks I'm magnificent.
Right. You're cute too.
How about that? She really knows how to use words, doesn't she? A mastermind. But no, we, you're lovely. We see every person exactly how we see ourselves. And if we see ourselves whole and perfect, we see others whole and perfect. We were talking in the car again. You know, Sally gets people talking. And so we were talking in the car about being a practitioner. And we were saying how practitioners live a very interesting life. They live a cold life. You call the practitioner, you say, practitioner, you have what? I would be whole and perfect. You what? I am whole and perfect. Bless you. Bye. And that's cold, you know. You're whole and perfect. 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 You know, and pretty soon, my enthusiasm just lifts them right up. Because that's what they really are. How many people have you ever visited who were sick? And you went in there, oh, I'm so sorry that you're feeling badly. I'm so sorry for you. Is there something I can do for you? Maybe make out your will for you or something like that. Is there something I can do for you? You know, and that's nothing. Now, that's the normal human being. Now, I'm your minister. Is there something I can do for you? I see that your family is wonderful, and I recognize that the doctor says you're going to be dead tomorrow. And now, is there something that I can do for you? Can I save your soul, perhaps, and help you find heaven and something like that? And you say, my God, you know, here I'm almost dead, and you're worried about my soul and finding God. You know, if you haven't accomplished it by now, it's a little late in the game, you know. And they say the criminal on the cross was Jesus. He looked over at Jesus, and he says, you know, man, you're cool. I believe in you. You know, you're really okay. And Jesus said, today art thou with me in paradise. You see? He said, well, that was a last minute decision. No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. Jesus saw the man on the cross with him as perfect. And so the man had to see Jesus as perfect. Well, why didn't the other fellow say it too? Well, he may have said it, but the thing is, just one was enough at the time limit of the story, you know, and the time limit of the news broadcast. They didn't have time to get everybody in there, you know. you think this is funny, but this is how it works. This is how it works. So here she is having this problem. Tomorrow she's going to die. And she says, look, Herb, I want to confess all my sins. And I said, you have no sins. I said, everything you did, you meant to do. Every rotten, dirty, miserable thing you did, you meant to do. Now, is there something nice you want to do? Well, yeah. I want to start liking myself. Hey, cool. Wow. Now, how do you start liking yourself? Well, I guess just saying, I like me, I like me, I like me. Hey, great. So I said, now look, tonight, you have 8 hours before you're supposed to die. So tonight, in these 8 hours, just say, I like me, 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 I like me. 8 hours, I like, oh, whatever you get, it's worth it, you know. You move on to the next dimension perhaps before you want to go. So, I like me, 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 I like me. What happens? What happens? You feel great. You have no reason to die anymore. You have forgiven yourself for all your sins, you know, which weren't really anything anyhow. But you cannot forgive anybody, and no one can forgive you. Kick her in the M. Ah! What did you do that for? I'm sorry. No, I'm not sorry. I meant to do that. Well, please, don't do that anymore. Okay. So I stopped doing it. Now, there's no forgiveness there. You stop doing it, you know, hitting your finger with a hammer and saying, why, that hurts terrible. Well, stop hitting it, you know. Okay, now, what's next? What's next is you say, I like me. I like me. I'm divine. I'm wonderful. I like me. Well, start acting like it. I like me. 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 And as you say that, what happens? Your whole world opens up. And you begin walking around like this here. I like me. 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 You got a brother named Herbert. I like me. 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 I do. And it's wonderful. You do that. And, oh, I got the burdens of the world on my shoulder. Oh, I feel so sad. I'm going to cave in. I'm going to die. You're ready for me, aren't you? You're going to get a shovel and dig a hole and drop me in. It'd be nicer if I dropped myself in. You know? You like yourself. You like life. Because you have many names. One of your names are love, life, peace, harmony, abundance, joy, right action, truth. You can go on with every lovely phrase you want. That's who you are. That's who you are. You are all that is good and wonderful. But you haven't got the message to your car. What? Haven't got the message to your car? I thought we were talking about our bodies, you know. Okay. You go and buy yourself a brand new lovely car. Name one. A car. Name it.
Lincoln.
Lincoln. Okay. A Lincoln what? SUV?
What?
Okay. Pretty cool, you know. And she got class. So here we have this Lincoln. Big Lincoln that you got. All those seats in it, 9 seats, and wow, you know, you're really tour down the highway with all your friends and with all your toys in the back, you know, your boats and stuff like that. And you're enjoying it. And you're driving the Lincoln, and after a while, you turn into the parking lot, and you hit the curb, boom, and then your wheels start to shimmy. And you're driving along, you say, oh, my wheel shimmies. And you just keep driving, and you don't do anything about it. And pretty soon, the rest of the car starts to shimmy. And pretty soon, you start to shimmy, and things happen. Now, if the moment you hit that curb, and the moment you feel that shimmy, you pull into the Lincoln garage and say, hey, I bumped my wheel. I think it's out of alignment, or I think something needs to be tended to. And they pick it up, and they say, whew, yeah, you sure did a good job here. It's a good thing you stopped right away, because you would have shimmied your whole car out of action, and you would have had to work on the whole car and take care of the whole car. It's a good thing you caught it right away. And so you go in, and you have the work done, and it's $2,000. Okay, wow, $2,000, you know. Yes. And that's a $60,000 car. Okay, so it's $2,000. You have it done perfect, and you don't go bumping any curbs anymore. You treat it lovingly. But that is an outdoor vehicle to drive. That's fine. That's fine. But you drive it with love. When you come to a curb, you don't go, boom, and bounce up in the air. You just go rolling up over it. You can do anything lovingly, gently. But you treat it with gentleness. And as you treat it with gentleness, the years go by. Whenever the car needs attention, you take it in and you have it taken care of. Whenever the car needs gas, you put gas in it, because if you don't put gas in it, you don't go. If you don't put oil in it, you don't go, even though it says it is oil for life. You take care of it. Now, this is our body. Our body, ow! We stub our toe, ow! If you say that, you're a fool. If you stub your toe, I'm home hurt. And it is done. There is no hurt in that toe. There is no pain in that toe. Not because you're young or old or whatever. Not because it heals fast because you're 10 years old, or it heals slow because you're 20 years old. I'm 25, you know. So, it's not because of it. You like that, huh? You think that's true?
Oh, I believe
that. Yeah, I believe that too. Okay. And that's what I say. Now remember that. Okay, so the minute anything happens. Now, you have been going through the last 18 years of your life, and you're now 22. You've been going through the last 18 years of your life, and you would, ouch, I got hurt, I got pain, and you know, you said the wrong things. Okay, it's time now to say the right things. Whenever you feel a pain, you instantly go to the car repair shop. Your mental car repair shop, your mental body repair shop, and you say, I'm whole and perfect. 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 If you have a cold, I'm whole and perfect. I'm whole and perfect. If you have cancer, I'm whole and perfect. I'm whole and perfect. If you have anything, anything, if you're going to school, I know that I know that I know God in me is the answer. I know that I know that I know God in me is the answer. I know that I know that I know God in me is the answer. I've used this with young people and older people on every area of their life where they wanted to do excellence in their schoolwork. You know? I know that I know that I know God in me is the answer. Now, what do you do when you hurt your finger? What do you say?
It depends on if I'm aware of it.
What?
It depends on if I'm aware of it.
Thank you. Thank you, Francine. I think I'm going to leave Pam alone. She doesn't realize we're playing a game right now. And I'm not a concern. She is so pure and so perfect, she's not even aware of it. And if she is so pure and so perfect, she's not even aware of it, she doesn't do it either. You know, if you're living in a high consciousness like that, you don't even do it, right? See, she agrees with that. She agrees with that. You don't even do it. Now, why do we have to treat for wholeness and perfection if we are whole and perfect? Why do we have to treat for wholeness and perfection if we're so fantastic? Well, when we are living our wholeness and perfection to the ultimate, then we don't have to say it because we live it. I teach on the ranch during our School of the Master program and so forth. Sometimes we have it for 3 months long, 24 hours a day. Oh boy. And we have people say, I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. Sleeping, eating, going to the bathroom, whatever. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. And as you say that, you're building that into your consciousness so beautifully. We had 18, 20 people at the School of the Master in the previous one that we had. And these people were people from everyday life. These people were people who were business people, who were mothers, and who were teachers, and who were from every walk. And all of these people came to the ranch and lived on the austere diet we had, which you could probably get at Tiffany's, you know, Beautiful food, beautiful everything, beautiful atmosphere. Served with a towel over the wrist like this, you know, everything done with class. They were learning class. And they would go out on the path, and they would create meditation paths throughout 104 acres up in the mountain. And all the time they'd be saying, I live in my ideal spirit, mind, body. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. I like me, I like me, I like me, I like me, I like me. And they would take hoes, and they would take rakes, and many of them like to go naked. And they would be out in the California sun, naked, you know, or with just their shorts on, or just their swimsuits on, or whatever they chose to wear. And every one of them was brown as a bear. Not one of them burned. Every one of them had their tube of skin tan lotion, you know, and some used it and some didn't. Most of them didn't. And they were all perfectly brown, perfectly tan, out in the hot of the day. And then sometimes they had to stay awake. Didn't have to stay awake, but they had to stand all night long. And they could not lie down and sleep. They had to stand. You say, well, that's a terrible thing to do to somebody. No, no. They learned they didn't need to lie down to sleep. They didn't need that. Some of them. I must admit, most of them had a little difficulty. And when I finally laid them down to sleep in the swim room that we had, where we had the jacuzzi and stuff with the pads over the top of them, and they fell right down. And just gone like a rock. But beautiful. But you see, every time they get up, I'm whole and perfect. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. They left the ranch after 3 months. The perfect example of physical magnificence. Every one of them. And some of them even wanted to shave their heads off. And they shaved their hair off. Some wanted to shave their hair off. And I said, go ahead. So I did it for them using my clippers and shaved it all off. And some of the girls, who were very nice girls, their heads were glorious. They had the most beautiful looking heads without any hair on that you could ever imagine. And when they got hair, they looked even more beautiful. But the thing is, they were just glorious. And some of the men who shaved them off, Stefan was one. He looked fantastic, but he did it for the wrong reason. He did it because one of the girls he admired shaved hers off. But nonetheless, every one of them was great. And every one of them, their hands were as soft as a baby's. Yet they used the hoes and the rakes and the shovels in creating the paths, meditation paths. But they were living in this consciousness of perfection, living in this consciousness of oneness within themselves, living in this consciousness that they are God, that they are the creators of their world, and living in the consciousness of loving doing what they're doing. And because they loved doing what they were doing, there was no calluses building up on their hands. There was no calluses. The sun was not burning them as it would under any normal circumstances. They were living in this magnificence. But that was their consciousness. I live in my ideal, spirit, mind, and body. Every organ, action, function of my body is perfect right now. I am a happy person. I'm a joyous person. We had Band-Aids there. We had first aid stuff there. And they never used it. They didn't, you know, get cactus into their legs. They didn't get prickers, and then they would be walking through the brush, you know, and they'd be scraping against them, and it would not take off their skin. It wouldn't rip into them. Because they were living in this consciousness of purity. Now, this is a fact. Right, Ellen?
Yes.
Yeah, Ellen was there. Who else was there? Yes, Francine was there, but not during that school. If Francine were there during that school, she would probably have a very interesting story to tell, too, because she's got...
Now, the snake didn't bite me, either.
Of course not. Of course not. And that's the point. If you want to see rattlesnakes, they're there. If you don't want to see them, you don't put them in your consciousness, and you don't experience them. I have lived on the ranch now, how many years, since 72 or 5, something like that, 75, we went up there to the Campo, to the top of the mountain, and I only saw a few rattlesnakes. And it's just because I was thinking rattlesnake, and then, pick, there it be. We were cleaning the steps one day next to the retreat, and I was taking the leaves away, and underneath the leaves was a little rattlesnake. And I said to my son, Mark, I said, Mark, look at this guy. And he says, well, don't hurt him. I hadn't planned to do anything. And he says, I'll take him and get rid of him, you know. So we put him in a bottle and put him on the back of his motorcycle. And he drove down to the desert from the mountain. And he was meant to leave the rattlesnake off in the desert. Well, he got in the desert, and our friend down there, the fire chief, said, you don't want to put this mountain rattlesnake in the desert. He'll die surely very quickly. You know, you might as well kill him right away. And but take it back up the mountain. So this guy is in this glass, you know, on the back of the motorcycle, having this very wonderful ride, and he's quite alive. And so Mark gets back up on top of the mountain, and he gets over by Hakumba, which is on the desert side of the mountain, and he lets the rattlesnake out. He puts the glass down. You know, he has no fear of these things. He's loving it. He's doing something beneficial for it. He sets him down, opens the bottle, and lets him crawl out. Well, the rattlesnake is happy in the bottle. And he says, well, I can't leave the rattlesnake out in the open in the bottle like that because the sun will cook him, you know. And so he rolls the bottle underneath a stone so that he'll have the shade of the stone. He can come out if he wants to, you know. And as far as we know, the rattlesnake's still in the bottle. But it was a baby rattlesnake. And we don't think of them as being dangerous or being bad or being harmful. We bless them and we say, now, you rattlesnakes, you just go. You got thousands of acres to play on here, and we have 104 acres, and we have many friends who come here, and they're not yet ready to realize that a kinship with all life exists, and that you are one of those we are kin with. And so the rattlesnakes go away. I was giving a lecture one day, and we had maybe about 30 people from down in El Cajon and a bunch from the surrounding territory. And Pam was there, not this Pam, but another Pam. And Pam and her husband were sitting on the edge, and this is outside underneath a live oak tree. And this big old rattlesnake, he was maybe about 4 or 5 or 6 feet long, and he comes crawling along to the group. And Pam's husband, he says, Pam, look. And she looks over and, oops. She, nothing bothers her. She is a spiritualist par excellence. And so she looked at the rattlesnake and said, yes, so. And then, oh, look, he shouts, you know. And I look over and I see the rattlesnake. And so all the people in the group are watching. And I walk over to where the rattlesnake is and I say, hey, buddy, turn around, get out of here. You're shaking these people up. That's not very nice. I said, we love you, now go. He turned around and went away. coincidence? Accident? Did he go because I wanted him to go? Or did he go because everybody in the group wanted him to go, you know? No, he went because I spoke my word. If I don't believe in my word, then why speak it? I said, hey, I have nothing against you. I was speaking to another group, and they were all sitting on some benches, and we were having an outdoor discussion. Up on top of the mountain, and we were talking about the Essenes, and we were talking about the philosophy of the Essenes and so forth. And so they were sitting on this bench. Behind them was the sagebrush and so forth. And then somebody giggled or laughed about something, and then the rattlesnake went, tickle, 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 you know, with his little rattle. And the bench fell over, and they all fell into the bushes by the rattlesnake. And I said, hey, rattlesnake, go away, will you? You're messing up my talk here. You're taking their attention away from what I'm trying to give them. Trying to give them what I'm giving them, see? And so we hadn't heard from him. And then we went further along the path about an hour later, and there he was sitting just outside of where we wanted to go next. And I said, hey, you haven't gone far enough. And so he went away. I was giving a Sunday service in Socrates Hall by the swimming pool at Meal Meditations, and my son was 22 or something like that, and he was barefoot with his short pants on and so forth, and he was outside. He is an independent character, does his own thing, builds ultralight airplanes and flies them all over the world and sells them all over the world. So he was standing outside, and I looked outside just before I was about to give my talk, and I said, Mark, are you coming in? He says, no, I'm doing something. And so after the service, I went out there, and everybody came out the door. And here he was with a hose squirting at the rattlesnake, saying, just stay away, go that way, go that way. And the rattlesnake was enjoying the shower and just staying under the bushes. And the people walked by and did their things. But you see, we're always the master. Mark thought that using the hose was a good way to keep him under control. And guess where he was sitting? He was sitting at the foot of a statue of St. Francis of Assisi. I mean, you know, what kind of a snake was that? He was a lover, you know? And if you looked, you might have even seen his little snakes there. But we are master of our life, of our word, of our way. What sort of things are you putting into motion for yourself? Now, Pam says, you know, I don't have those experiences. Well, don't say that. Say, I am master of my life. I have good experiences. I have happy experiences. How's your wealth condition? I am independently what?
Wealthy.
Wow! I'm independently wealthy. You?
Same.
Say it.
I'm independently wealthy.
Super. You know, don't go around saying same, because when you go around saying same, you may not know what. She may be independently wealthy as a millionaire, and you are a Gatesaire, you know. You are a William Gates. Bill Gates? You know Bill Gates? How much has he got?
Billions, I think.
Billions, you know. He's the richest man in the world. My goodness. And isn't that a nice consciousness? Now, does Bill Gates' money own him? Does the money that Bill Gates have, does it possess his attention? Does it possess his time? No. You know what he did? He married a girl who's wealthy too, and he says, sweetheart, it's your job to give away our money. It's your job to find people to give it to that we think would enjoy it and use it wisely and well. Now, isn't that a cool thing? But you know, if Bill Gates really loves his wife, and it appears that they have a fairly decent relationship, if he really loved his wife, he would never do that to her. He would say, here, organization, whoever you are, take care of my philanthropic gifts. I want nothing to do with them. I only want to create the magic of what delights me. It doesn't delight him to give away money. It doesn't delight him to keep money. It delights him to work on his software projects that delight him very much. It delights him to shout at his employees and say, come on, you can do it, you can do it, you can do it. And they wake up, he shouted at me. And then all of a sudden they realize, yeah, I can do it. How's your foot? Home perfect. You know? Well, why are you pointing to my foot and asking how it is? Well, why are you thinking about it? Your foot's home perfect. How's your nose?
Home perfect.
How's your forehead?
Home perfect.
How are your eyes?
Home perfect.
How are your ears?
Home perfect.
How's your body?
Home perfect.
How's your attitude?
Home perfect.
Fantastic. Now, why did I say attitude? Does she have a bad attitude? No. These are just words we use. And when we say attitude, what kind of attitude do you have? Fantastic! And you?
Home
and you?
Home
look
perfect.
You?
Home
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 we're back to you again.
Home perfect.
Okay, now. When would we ever have an attitude that was not whole and perfect? When we name it and claim it. When do we have an attitude that's whole and perfect? When we name it and claim it. You see, I don't want to get into this area too much because this is another area. It's an area called the Absolute. In Absolute, all is. All is. Everything exists. There's nothing that to be created nor destroyed. There's nothing to be brought forth or not brought forth. It all exists. But you see, that's what we live in. We live in that. Now, what out of the allness, what out of the absolute do you want? You can have wholeness out of the absolute, and you can have illness out of the absolute. Whatever you want. And neither is considered good or bad. It's purely an is. What do you want to experience in your life without judgment? What do you want to experience in your world without judgment? What you want to experience in your world without judgment is your choice. Sally, what kind of a dog have you got? And I don't mean the breed and all that kind of stuff. What kind of dog? You have a lover.
Yes.
You, huh?
Yes, he's that.
What do you mean, yes, he's that?
He's that lover.
A lover. Mm-hmm. You have a lover for a dog. Now, what kind of dog do we have who's a guard dog? What kind of a dog do we have that's a guard dog? We have a dog that wants to protect something. That wants to protect the family. And we put our personality into that dog. And that dog will not let anyone come near the house. Will not let anyone come near the world that we're in. That dog protects us. Now, excuse me, why do we need protection? Why do we need protection? Anybody know? I take off the inner paper too. Why do we need protection? What are we being protected from? Ourselves. We're being protected. That'd be good. We're being protected from ourselves. We're being protected from ourselves. Yeah, I have small ones too, which fit on the tongue a little better. But we're being protected from ourselves. Now, why should we have to be protected from ourselves? Because that's what we say. I surround my house with my pure white light of hatred and anger and unhappiness. Who says that? Who says that? Where do you hide your jewels? Where do you hide your money? Where do you hide your treasures? Where do you hide them? Because then, when you're not home, I can go there and get it, you know. Now, my brother is a great guy. He's 82, 83, and he has saved enough money for his funeral. And he has a safe in his closet, and on his dresser, he has a little jewelry box, and there's a key to the safe, which everybody knows. And so I said to him, I said, Ray, why have you got money in there for your funeral when you're a veteran and the veterans organization is going to take care of you and you're going to be buried in the military funeral when you choose to have it done? And so why have you saved money? He said, well, because. I said, all right, that's a good answer. And he says, I have $500 in there. I said, Ray, $500. That's nice. I said, that's what the ministerial fee is, huh? $500. He said, well, something like that. He said, but I said, well, why have you done this? He said, well, that's my treasure. And I said, well, great. Here's $1,000 added to that. And I have it in my pocket. You have your treasure in your chest. You have it hidden because you're afraid someone will take it. No one would ever think that I have money in my pockets. Ellen had a husband who was a very remarkable man. He was a financial counselor in Lugano in Switzerland. And they were married 27 years, two fabulous children, and so forth. Well, Alias is his name. You know what Alias means? Alias means light, sun. The sun from Greece in the Greek. Yeah, it's a Greek word from sun. And so Alias has his Maserati and his Porsche and his other lovely toys that he has and his boats and what have you. But he is a financial counselor. And people come to him and say, I want you to invest this money for me. I want you to do this. I want you to do this. And he says, okay. And so they bring him cash. $1 million, $5 million, $10 million. They bring him cash, you know, and to his hand. They said, well, here, invest this. He says, well, we'll count it first, have the secretary count it. Secretary counts it and says, yep. And so what does he do? He sticks it in his back pocket and gets onto his moped. Not his Maserati or the Porsche or anything like that. And wears his, you know, outing walking jacket and drives off to the bank. Goes into the bank, as he often does, and deposits his money or whatever he does with it. And no one would ever think that he had $1 million, $2 million in his pocket, you know? But you see, and his consciousness wouldn't attract somebody to him that he had that. And he did that often. He mentioned that to us a number of times, but it's so fantastic. He was a wealthy man. Whenever he went anywhere with anybody, he paid. Whenever he did anything, and he told her, he says, look, sweetheart, I have put $5,000 in your credit card. Spend it. I have put $50,000 in your credit card. Spend it. And she said, but I don't need anything, you know. And he said, spend it, you know. And he never got her to spend. And that was just her need. She lived in absolute independent wealth without spending a thing virtually. Everything was there for her. Her car was there. Her house was there. Everything. But you see, that's two areas of living in abundance. She had everything she needed. And everywhere she looked, the wealthiest people in town were her friends. The wealthiest man in Switzerland, what's his name?
Mantegatta.
Leo Mantegatta. He comes visiting at her house, has coffee with her, you know. I mean, these are the type of people that she surrounded herself with and that her husband surrounded himself with and that their family was. They lived in absolute wealth, in independent wealth. And she never had to worry about a thing. And you see, then he died and life went on. But the thing is, the world goes on. How do you live in independent wealth? She lives in independent wealth. In California, she has one of the finest homes you could ever want to live in. In her back of her home, she has her private jacuzzi, her private swim-ex. You swim against the current of the water with your exercising machine. She has a four-car garage. She drives these big white and blue expeditions. And she has 104 acres to play with. And she has a staff of people that she doesn't have to pay anything to. She doesn't receive any money herself. Nobody gets any money. We just operate the organization, and the organization takes care of us. And it's wonderful. But it's a beautiful way. We're independently wealthy. We have no idea what wealth we have. We have no idea where the next dollar is coming from. We have no idea. But always the opportunity to share our philosophy, share our teaching, share our love with everybody. We live it first, and then we share it. We are living examples of what we believe. At least that's what I like to believe, and that's what I know. A living example of what you believe. Now, what do you believe? You believe whatever words come out of your mouth. Now, are you a glorious lady?
Yes.
I like a little enthusiasm here. Are you a glorious lady?
Yes.
Yes. Now, do you think that anyone would believe you walking down the street if somebody said, well, Marcella, are you a lovely lady?
Yes.
Yeah. Or, yes. And what is it any of your business? Can't you tell I'm a glorious lady just by looking at me? I look at you and I see you as a glorious person. Can't you see me as a glorious person? Yeah, don't argue about it. We do that. We argue about our blessings. Now, are you a glorious person?
Oh, yes.
I like that. Yes. The oh is okay, but that's just her old habit coming up of watering down her yes. But yes. Are you the most beautiful woman who's ever walked upon the face of the earth? Yes. Yes!
Yes!
Ooh. It took a while to get that out. It's like pulling hen's teeth. You know? But we want to play the game. You see, that's what life is. Life is purely a game. And in the game, you play it. Now, here we all are. We're all playing Monopoly. You're familiar with Monopoly. You are familiar with Monopoly, aren't you? Okay.
Yes.
So, yes. So we're all playing Monopoly. Why is it that this lady all the time owns the bank? Why is it that she is the banker and gives the money in and takes the money out and stuff like that? Why is it that she's the one who does that? Why is it that she owns all the major hotels? You know, why is it that she owns all of the major utilities, you know? And you think utilities are not so good? If you own them all, you do very well. Okay, why is it? Why is it? She never goes to jail. She always passes jail and picks up $200. Yeah? Why? Consciousness. Attitude. Why don't you do that? Why is it you always go to jail? You say, oh, you didn't notice recently. I stopped going to jail. I didn't find that to be a salubrious place for me to be. I just go by. But now, you get the card that says, and do not pick up $200. But now, hey, think about this. Think about this. Who is the game for? Who is the game for Monopoly? Me. You. The game is for 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 you and 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 you. Okay. Do you have a right to do as you please? We have a lady working with us, Ingeborg. She's 79 years old, a super lady. German, yeah, out of Dusseldorf. She lived in Italy during the war, Second World War, and her mother was a postmaster there and so forth, and she's just a gentleman, a fantastic lady. A wonderful lady. Brilliant. Beautiful in every way. Headstrong. Woo-hoo. Well, Ingeborg plays games with us. We'll play, what games do we play? I don't
Monopoly.
Monopoly. No, that comes later. She plays cards
Uno.
With us. Uno. Okay, Uno. She plays Uno with us. And so we're playing Uno, and we're having just a great time. And then Ingeborg says, no. That's not the rule. Well, Ingeborg, what is the rule? Well, the rule is this. And she's changed it. And so by the time the game goes on, we have changed rules about 5 or 6 times. And so we say, Ingeborg, that's fine. Now we'll write that down. That's the new rule. You can do that. You can do it. We're playing a game for the fun of it. We're not playing a game because the game rules own us. We're playing a game because it's our game. So she's rewritten it. And then the next time we sit down, she's forgotten what she rewrote. And so now she brings up a new set of rules. And so we have to write down a new set of rules. But we are not so terrible. Why do you do this? You know, that doesn't bother us. We say, hey, it's a game. I'm rolling and having a good time with the game. So she gives us a new set of rules as she makes that up as she goes along. And we don't say, Ingeborg, you are absolutely without, you know. We just say, hey, that's okay. We love you. You'd do the same with a kid, wouldn't you? If a kid wants to change the rules, you don't say, you can't do that. You say, fine, let's change. Now, and if you want to change it anytime along the way, let me know, and we'll change it. But we're not bound by those rules. Those are just a game. And so in Monopoly, let's go to the deck of cards in Monopoly, and let's take out those do not collect $200. Let's take out those go to jail cards. Let's take out those cards that we don't really want to experience. You see, well, you take all the fun out of the game. Well, if that's fun, then leave it in your game. But my game, I don't see that it's fun to go to jail or not to pick up $200 and pass go and stuff like that. I don't think that's fun. Well, that's part of the game. Well, sure, but let's make our own game. Are you all perfect all the time?
Yes.
That's your game. That's your game. Do you have this SARS virus come through here and make you sick? No.
No.
Do you have cancer ever? No. Do you have problems ever? No. Are you whole and perfect always? Yes. Now, why is it that your mind says, uh-oh, got to put your goulashes on, got to put your coat on. Now, don't you go outside without your hat on. You catch a cold. You know how we tell our kids that? Stupid! You don't catch a cold because you don't have a hat on. You catch a cold because you got an attitude. Because you got a low what?
Self-esteem.
Low self-esteem, but you have a low?
Tolerance.
Hmm?
Low tolerance.
Tolerance?
Low self-esteem, low tolerance.
Self-esteem, tolerance. There's another word.
Consciousness.
Hmm?
Consciousness.
It's your immune system. Your immune system is low. And what creates your immune system? Your thought. When you like yourself, you have a super immune system. When you don't like yourself, your immune system fades. Your immune system is a reflection of you and your thought. And You are the master of your immune system by saying, I'm whole and perfect, I'm fantastic. I'm walking the path and I'm holding onto the leash. Sometimes the dog's pulling a little bit and I say, no. And then the leash has a dip in it. Yes, 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 yes. No. Yes, yes, yes. No. You know. And then finally I say, enough, 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 enough. You walk perfectly. You are a wonderful dog. He's 6 months old, you know, and he's like so tall, you know, golden retriever. And you're wonderful. You're wonderful. Rex, I'm so proud of you. Rex, you're so great. And I'm loving him. And I'm shedding that love on him. And I'm saying, you're wonderful. You do everything great. And what am I doing? I'm standing taller. Instead of you know, leaning over, being pulled somewhere, I'm standing taller. I say, Rex, you're wonderful. Rex, you're wonderful. You know, Rex, you're fantastic. And then pretty soon Rex has his head up and he walks with his tail high and he says, I'm with my dad. And we're wonderful. We're fantastic. I do everything to make my dad happy. And my dad does everything to make me happy. And he says, you're not his dad. That's a symbol. That's a good symbol. But you see, I'm his dad. I'm his creator. I create him as a super dog, as a joyous dog. And in the process, I create him a joyous dog because I am a joyous person. Because I like me. Because I like who I am. I like what I am. I like the way that I live, the way that I act, the way that I think, the way that I do anything. I like me. And my world is a perfect reflection of who I am. Can you see that? This is who you are. Now, I kind of thought we were pushing a little bit. Now, what is our scheduling? Are we
whatever you choose?
Whatever I choose. Okay.
You
run the show or me? Huh? Huh?
I'm saying you run the show.
Oh, rebellion! Wonderful. No, I have come to that choice also with you. Because I have felt your vibration saying, let's just take a pause. So, now we're going to take a pause. But when we come back from this pause, we're going to start working on some terrific affirmations that are going to direct our life in the way we want to go. And we're going to use these affirmations every moment of our life, whether we speak them out loud or at peace. So let's come back at 5:30. It is now 4:15 approximately. And so is that right with your watches?
I got 20 after.
20 after? Okay. Clock up there? Yeah. This is, okay. Let's come back at 10:30 or 10:35, somewhere in there, and we'll continue. So I love you. I love you. I love you.